When should you have the talk about where babies come from? How about puberty? STIs and pregnancy prevention? Families ask me about this all the time because they want to make sure that kids have the information they need at developmentally appropriate times. But they also often worry that exposure to sexuality that's too much or too early will destroy their child's innocence or harm them in some way. So, what is the right time to start talking to kids about sexuality? That's what we're talking about today on Sex Ed at Home, where we're on a mission to modernize sex ed by helping feminist parents and caring adults talk to the kids in their lives about sex, bodies, and relationships, honestly. I'm Rebecca, and I am so glad you're joining me in raising a sexually smarter future. Okay, so what is the right age to start talking to kids about sexuality? This might surprise you, but the answer is at birth. And sometimes people have a really strong reaction to this. They're like, I'm not teaching my toddler about sex. Have you completely lost it? But here's the thing. You are teaching them about sexuality, even if you never say a word. So you might as well learn to do it on purpose, with purpose. So I'm going to offer you a couple of general age guidelines that can be a helpful framework, because I know that some of you will want concrete answers to this question. But then I'm actually going to spend most of the episode talking about how these guidelines are not necessarily the most important thing you need to think about when deciding when and how to talk to your kids about sexuality. So kids generally start asking questions about where babies come from around age 4, which is a great time to start talking about that even if they haven't asked. You'll want to start talking about puberty around age 8, and you want to talk about STI prevention and pregnancy prevention starting around age 11 or 12. If you want more information about exactly what kids need to know at each age and stage about sexuality, you can go to my website, www.everybodytalks.co, and download my free What by When guide, which goes into all of this stuff in much more detail. But again, I really want to stress that we are teaching our kids all the time about sexuality, whether we know it or not, and whether we're talking to them about it explicitly or not. So there are a couple of things that we need to get into to understand this idea. And the first is that sexuality is much bigger than the birds and the bees and how to stay safe. So when we think about sex or sex education, most of us probably think about the things I mentioned at the top of the episode. So where babies come from, puberty, and STI and pregnancy prevention. Maybe we also think about sexual anatomy and physiology, or maybe even consent. And all of those things are super important, and we definitely should be talking to kids about them. And sexuality is about so much more than that. Our sexuality is an inherent part of all of us, from the time we're born until the time we die. And actually, it can influence us even before we're born. Just think about the phenomenon of gender reveal parties. So families are already assigning gender based on the genitals that they can see in utero, and they're using that information, consciously or unconsciously, to determine what this new little human will be like. And I don't just mean what color the nursery walls will be or which little onesies to buy, but they're imagining a whole gendered future for this child, what they'll look like, who they'll partner with, what kind of name they'll have, what kind of work they'll do, what kinds of toys or activities they might enjoy. And all, you know, again, consciously or unconsciously, all of this is influenced by the gender that the family assumes the child will be based on their genitals. And all of that has to do with our sexuality. Sexuality is incredibly broad. It touches almost every facet of our lives. It includes how we feel about and experience our own and others' bodies, how we experience closeness with other people, how we communicate and make decisions in relationships. It includes how we perceive and experience our gender, how we are treated based on others' perception of our gender, who we want to be with in intimate or sexual relationships and how we convey that, how sexuality is used to influence or manipulate us through media or culture or other people, how we understand and use our own power in relationships to others, and so much more. All of that is just as important as the things that most of us initially think about when we think about talking with our kids about sex and bodies, things like reproduction and puberty and how to stay safe. But all of that stuff can also feel a lot more nuanced and tricky to talk about. And that's in part because a lot of those things don't have factual or scientific answers, right? It's relatively easy to explain how a baby is made or how an STI is transmitted. There are facts to convey. You can do it in a really clinical way. There are right and wrong answers. And when I work with families, these are often the things that they seem to feel most comfortable explaining to kids. And when I work with kids, these are the things that they tend to know the most about already. It's the other stuff that feels really hard, right? How do you explain the outfits in the fetish shop window? I live in Portland, Oregon, and we are known as the strip club capital of the United States. So we have, like, you know, strip club billboards and fetish shops with, like, leather gear and stuff in the windows. And so, you know, I'm often told by families that they have trouble explaining this stuff to their kids. How do you explain why your kiddo can't run around naked when there are guests, or how people masturbate, or why someone would want to perform oral sex? These are the questions that tend to trip parents up, and they're also the questions that I get the most in the anonymous question box when I teach kids. So it's these aspects of sexuality, the parts that are about navigating feelings and sensations and relationships, the parts that are about understanding the social norms and the taboos and unpacking media messages about sex. These are the parts that are most needed and also hardest to talk about. And part of what makes all of this so tricky to talk about with kids is erotophobia. So we, and I'm speaking here from a US perspective, although this is certainly true in other places as well, we live in a culture that both glorifies and stigmatizes sex and sexuality, right? So we see sexuality used to sell everything from fast food hamburgers to cars, and women's bodies are on display in ads and in other media, usually for the benefit of those doing the looking, and not for the woman herself. Little girls are sexualized from the time they're toddlers. I mean, have you ever tried to buy shorts at Target? If you compare the inseams and the fit of the shorts in the girls section and the boys section, it's shocking. And don't even get me started on the pockets. There's also internet porn sites that make money hand over fist. And, you know, I'm sure you can think of a million other ways that sexuality is used in our culture as a commodity, something to be bought and sold, something to be consumed, something that makes women and girls in particular into objects. Sex sells, and in our capitalist culture, that means it's everywhere we look. At the same time, we have these very puritanical roots that perpetuate a lot of shame and stigma around sexuality, especially women's sexuality and queer sexuality. For example, why is it okay for men to take off their shirts in public, but not women? Why is it acceptable for men to have a lot of sexual partners, but if a woman does that, she is a slut? Why all the hullabaloo about kinksters at Pride? Like, oh no, don't wear leather in front of the children. And remember the school dress code debates from a few years ago when schools were telling girls that they couldn't wear tank tops to school because it was too distracting for the boys, or even worse, the male teachers? There are so many things wrong with that. I can't even begin to unpack it right now. And these are just a few examples that I could think of off the top of my head. I'm sure you could think of a million other ways that individual sexuality is stigmatized or made shameful in US culture. So on the one hand, we have commodification and commercialization of sexuality and women's sexuality in particular for profit. And on the other hand, we have shame and stigma designed to stifle and control sexuality, especially the sexuality and the bodies of women and queer folks. Plus, our kids are growing up on the internet with unprecedented access to sexually explicit materials from both peers and porn sites, and the specter of them making adolescent mistakes like sending nudes that will roam the internet forever and pop out at the worst possible times to scare off future employers or partners or whatever. Whew, it's a lot, you know? No wonder we're confused and anxious about how to talk to them about all of this and help them navigate it. And then pile on top of that the shamefully bad sex ed that most of us got as kids, which did not in any way equip us to have sophisticated understandings of our own sexuality, much less anyone else's, or the skills we need to navigate sexual and intimate relationships with ourselves and other people. And the fact that, you know, some of you out there probably experienced childhood sexual abuse or trauma, and you may not feel equipped to talk about sexuality in a way that doesn't cause pain or harm to you and your child. So there are all of these different reasons that families may not want to or may not feel comfortable or equipped to talk with their kids about sexuality in frank ways that they feel confident they can do well. A mom said to me recently that her sex ed strategy for her 10-year-old has been to keep him more or less clueless. And another mom not too long ago told me that she just wants to protect her daughter's innocence for as long as possible. Given how complicated and scary all this can feel, those are totally understandable impulses. But here's the thing. We can't protect our kids from learning about sexuality because their sexuality is a part of them. And sexuality is all around them. So when we try to protect them, what we're actually doing is denying them crucial information that they need to have healthy, vibrant, pleasurable relationships with themselves, their own bodies, and other people. And I'm not talking about the sexual relationships they'll have in the future. I'm talking about the relationships they have now. Childhood sexuality is not the same as adult sexuality, and we shouldn't treat it as if it was. But we need to understand that it exists, and it's an important part of our children's experience of themselves and of the world. And they're learning how to navigate it by watching us, even if we never speak to them about it. So let's think about an example. One of the earliest things kids learn about their sexuality is how to relate to their genitals, what they're called, and when and how they can touch them. So let's imagine a dad helping a toddler with a vulva in the bath. He's got a washcloth and he's washing his kiddo's body and he's naming each body part as he washes it. So hands, arms, shoulders, chest, belly. But when he gets to the vulva, he washes it, but he doesn't say vulva out loud. And then he moves on to the thighs, the knees, the calves, the feet. So what does this kiddo learn, this little toddler in the bath, learn about their vulva from that interaction? Well, what they learn is that it's a part of the body that can't be talked about, and that it's somehow different from all the other body parts whose names we can say out loud. And things that are not to be talked about are usually secret or shameful in some way. Or let's imagine that dad does say something as he washes the vulva, but he calls it a pee-pee or a private area or down there. Well, that sends a similar message, right? It says, we can talk about this body part, but only in coded language. It says, this part is different from the other parts. It's secret. It's embarrassing. It's shameful. We can't really talk about it. Now, let's imagine the same dad washing the same kiddo, but very nonchalantly saying vulva as he washes the vulva, or inviting kiddo to wash their vulva. So what that communicates is, this is a body part, like all the other body parts. There's nothing secret or shameful here. We can talk about it just as easily as we talk about your belly or your knee. This may seem like a small thing, but it's not. It helps the child understand that their vulva is an important and respected part of their body that deserves to be cared for and can be talked about. And that's important because it sets them up to be able to talk about it with healthcare providers and future partners. It keeps them safer from sexual abuse, and it allows them to have a relationship with that part of their body that isn't shrouded in shame and secrecy. So this is just one example of how our actions as parents can speak volumes to our kids about their sexuality, even if we never say a word. So here's another example, and with apologies to my mother, who is wonderful. Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I love you. So when I was growing up, people told me all the time how much I looked like my mom. All the time. It seemed like we could not go anywhere in public without people telling us how much we looked alike. Now, I thought, and I still think, that my mom is beautiful, so I took it as a compliment. But I also heard my mom complain about her thighs all the time. And she talked about how she couldn't wear shorts because of the way her thighs looked. She hated her thighs. That was very clear. To this day, I'm not sure I've ever seen my mother in a pair of shorts or a short skirt. Now, my mom never said anything critical to me about my thighs, and in fact, she rarely criticized my appearance in any way and often went out of her way to tell me that I was beautiful. But to my adolescent brain, the logic went, I look like my mom, and my mom's thighs are too ugly for shorts, therefore my thighs must also be too ugly for shorts. And I was self-conscious about my legs for years, and I didn't wear shorts in public until I was well into my 30s. So, Mom, again, if you're listening to this, I love you. I know you did your best, and I am not upset with you about this, but I'm sharing it because I want to illustrate what a powerful influence we have on our kids and their relationship to their body and their sexuality, even when we're not saying anything or we're saying something that we want them to believe, but that we don't believe ourselves. That's why I think that in order to raise sexually healthy kids, the most powerful thing we can do is examine the relationship we have with our own sexuality, discern whether it's in alignment with our values and what we want to be teaching and modeling for our kids, and if not, work on healing and alignment in our own relationship to our own sexuality. We really do have to put our own oxygen mask on first. The good news is we don't have to do it all at once. We can grow and evolve with our child as what they need and want to know changes. And I know it might feel daunting or overwhelming to think about the fact that we're teaching our kids about sexuality all the time, even when we're not doing it on purpose, and what kinds of messages might we be sending. And I get it. In some ways, it might be easier to feel like you could just prepare for the talk at a few key points in your child's development, like studying for a test that you could get an A on if you just prepare well enough. And there are some things that are like that, that kids are not going to just pick up by watching you, that you'll need to explain in an intentional conversation, like where babies come from and how periods work and how condoms are used. But most of what they learn from you about sexuality will be in these little day-to-day moments, the way that they see you navigate your life and your relationships in and with your body, the small opportunities that you seize to talk with them about gender or feelings or consent or their bodies or sex. And I actually think that's good news. Yes, it asks more of us as parents, and we so often feel like we don't have more to give. It asks for more of our attention, our presence, our willingness to take emotional risks, our capacity to engage with our own sexuality and values. But it also asks less. It asks for less perfectionism, less content overwhelm because you're trying to shove a ton of information into a few conversations, less pressure to get the talks exactly right because you know that these are continuing conversations that will change and evolve as you and your child do. And if you get something wrong or you change your mind or you decide you wish you had said something else, you can go back and you can talk to them about it again and you can fix it. When we examine and align our relationship with our own sexuality, and when we have frank conversations with our kids about their sexuality and sexuality in general throughout their lives, we're able to be intentional about the messages we're sending them and the things they're learning from us about how to go through life as sexual beings. We're doing it on purpose. And when we do it on purpose, with awareness and intention, we're much more likely to get the outcomes we want. Raising sexually healthy kids and changing our cultural norms around sexuality for the better. And we may also get some outcomes we didn't intend or foresee, like reparenting ourselves and healing our own wounded relationships with our bodies, our gender, our sexual orientation, and all the other facets of sexuality that we try to guide our children through. So, when should you talk with your children about sexuality? Now. Even if they're older, it's not too late. Start now. Talk often. Make mistakes and go back and repair. Ask questions. Observe what you see in their relationships and the media they consume. Be curious and non-judgmental about what's going on for them in their bodies and in their hearts and in their minds. Follow their lead. And if you need more support, I'm here. Check out my website for on-demand classes and live workshops, or reach out with questions you want me to answer on the show. Until next time, I'm Rebecca. Thanks for listening to Sex Ed at Home.